Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, October 16th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, last night, the National League Championship Series advanced. The Dodgers, of course, won Game 3 with 11 runs in the first inning. So the big question going into the game was about Braves rookie starter Bryce Wilson and how would he handle the moment while pitching against future Hall of Famer Clayton Kershaw. You know what happened? Bryce Wilson attacked the strike zone. He threw well. The Braves were down 1-0, bottom of the fourth inning. Marcell Ozuna at the plate.
The 1-0. Swing and a high fly ball. That's pretty well struck left field. Going back is Peterson on his way and out of here. And just like that, we are starting over. For Marcell Ozuna, his second homer of these playoffs, it's 1-1.
Bryce Wilson threw a lot of fastballs, including to Kike Hernandez at the end of the fifth inning.
The 2-2 is cut on and missed. It went upstairs, and he strikes out the side. Two looking, one swinging.
Nasty.
And Bryce Wilson has been excellent here tonight.
A tremendous outing for him. And Kershaw was pretty good, too. But in the bottom of the sixth inning, Ronald Acuna Jr. led off with a single. Then Freddie Freeman came to the plate.
Kershaw ready, fires. Swing and a ground ball. That's a base hit into right field. Acuna around third. He's in to score. That'll roll all the way to the fence. Freeman into second. And the Braves have taken a 2-1 lead. Freddie Freeman comes through. Who else?
So, Tara, let me ask you, when you're watching games, do you manage along? Because I do. I love doing that. It's one of my favorite things about watching games.
I guess through these playoffs, I've been just excited for hits and runs. But to the point I think that you're alluding to here, yes, I would have taken Clayton Kershaw out here. I mean,
okay. Well, you jumped to the finish line. I was going to marinate a little bit. Oh. Yeah, but that's exactly what was going on. After Freeman's double, at that point, the next three hitters coming to the plate for the Atlanta Braves, all right-handed, Ozuna, Darnell, Albies. And Ozuna, in his previous plate appearance, had hit that home run. So I definitely was surprised as I was watching this play out that Kershaw was left in the game to face Ozuna. This is what happened.
Payoff pitch. Curveball lined out into left center field. That'll touch down for a hit. Freeman around third. He's coming in to score. Ozuna dives into second with a head first slide. It's a double. It knocks in a run. And the Braves lead it 3-1.
Kershaw came out of the game and the Braves absolutely exploded.
The pitch. Swing and a ground ball. Fair ball inside the third base bag. Down the line. In to score is Ozuna. Albies racing for third. He's coming to the plate. Albies slides in. It's a two-run double. Dansby Swanson with a big insurance hit. And it's all Braves now as they lead this one 5-1.
Yeah, Taylor, I don't know if you know this, but Dansby Swanson went to Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt grad.
Fine player, having a big moment again.
What?
In the postseason.
Oh, my goodness. You must be like a proud papa over there, Buster.
Bottom of the seventh, Marcell Ozuna at the plate again for the Braves.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball drilled to center. Bellinger back, turning and looking. Out of here! And Ozuna makes his way around the bases. Second homer of the night. And the Big Bear mixing it up. The Braves get that run back. It's 8-2.
A huge night for Ozuna as the Braves win 10-2. He had a home run. He had a double. He had that second home run. He had a single in his last plate appearance. So he has broken through. After the game, Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, talked about the team coming back from that wipeout loss in Game 3.
Feels good. Feels really good. You know, we still got a lot of work to do. I mean, you know how quick things can turn, and I was really proud of the guys, how they bounced back after yesterday. I was asked that, too, and what would their demeanor be. And if you heard that clubhouse in there as they were getting ready to play this game and the approach, and these guys are resilient, man, and they did a great job of turning the page from last night.
Dave Roberts was asked about his decision to leave Kershaw in the game to face Ozuna.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the inning prior, the fourth inning, was a clean inning. He punched the last guy and, you know, you induce weak contact, that, you know, tough play, and it gets away from the first baseman and he gets second base. And There's another ground ball by the first baseman. We had Freeman way over in the gap, but turned a single into a double. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I thought Clayton was throwing the baseball really well, and there was no reason. So I just felt really good about it. Yeah.
We'll be talking about all that with Mark Teixeira coming up. He was asked about Clayton Kershaw's playoff woes and the narrative.
He came out and, you know, five innings, one run. And then, you know, again, we just, you know, what happened right there in that sixth inning. But he gave us a chance to win the baseball game. You know, we couldn't put any runs up early and get a lead and or hold a lead, you know, after the Eddie home run. But that narrative couldn't be further from the truth.
Kershaw was asked about his struggles in the sixth inning.
It's just kind of playing part of playing on turf. You know, he kind of chopped that one up. And, you know, Freddie had two strikes on him and probably just went one too many pitches inside. And he hit it good, but it was on the ground. And still with two strikes, probably got to make a better pitch. And, yeah, it's a tough way to go for that sixth inning for sure.
Kershaw, 35 games in the postseason. And in those games, the Dodgers are under 500, 17-18. Kershaw now has a 7.31 career postseason ERA from the sixth inning on as a starter, the worst in postseason history for any pitcher with 20 innings. The numbers are what the numbers are. Remember what Jake Odorizzi said on the podcast yesterday, Taylor, when I asked him about what he's looking for with Kershaw coming back from the back issue? You know, Odorizzi himself a couple years ago had a back issue, and he talked about Kershaw's command and how important that was going to be to watch. Well, Kershaw in this start finished by throwing 43.7% of his pitches in the strike zone, the lowest in any of his 28 career playoff starts and his lowest in any start since September of 2019. The Astros, the Rays, the Astros still trying to come back from that 3-0 deficit. They were trailing in this series 3-1 as this started, and George Springer got him going.
George Springer leads it off, swings at the first pitch, drills it down the left field line and gone. An absolute rocket down the left field line off the bat of George Springer on the first pitch that he sees. And the Astros have an early 1-0 lead.
That was Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio. And by the way, I don't think I mentioned Boog Sciambi, of course, the play-by-play man on ESPN Radio for the Dodgers and Braves series. He's working alongside Jessica Mendoza. I'm serving as a wingman with those broadcasts. A slumping Rays player came through for them in the top of the third.
The 1-1, a swing and a fly ball, right center field. It's pretty well hit. Reddick's back, and it's going to go. Brandon Lau turns one around for a home run. And they are going nuts in the Rays dugout right now as he has tied the game at one.
But the Astros answered back quickly.
It's tied right now as the 2-1 to Brantley, lined into right field, and he does it again. Reddick will come in to score. Rounding third, heading home, Maldonado, and he's in there in a head-first slide on a two-run single by Brantley to make it 3-1 Houston.
But the same guy who's been absolutely killing everybody in the postseason came through for the Rays again in the top of the fifth.
The 0-1 to a Rosarena, lifted in the air, right center field, hit pretty well. Springer going back, and can you believe it? Another home run for Randy Arozarena, as he takes Paredes out to right center field to bring the Rays back within one.
And the Rays would tie the game at the top of the eighth.
2-1, the count on Choi. James sets and fires, and a fastball hit high in the air, deep right field, and he has tied the game. A no-doubt-about-it home run by G-Man Choi, and it's 3-3 here in the eighth inning.
And in the ninth inning, Carlos Correa came to the plate for the Astros.
Here's the 1-1. Fastball and a fly ball to center field. It is deep. Kiermaier's back, and Correa has walked it off for the Astros. They live to see another day. Carlos Correa sends an Anderson fastball to straightaway center field and walks it off. Houston wins game 5, and there will be a game 6 tomorrow night in the ALCS.
And for the Astros, a wild celebration that was culminated by a big hug between Dusty Baker and Carlos Correa. Correa had predicted his walk-off as he passed Baker on his way to the on-deck circle. Baker talked about this is why he came back to manage.
Boy, that was as big a game as I've ever been involved in, and that's one of the reasons why I came back.
He talked about Carlos Correa.
Well, that was very crucial. I mean, you know, Carlos told me, you know, before he went up there, he goes, you know, walk off. And I said, go ahead on, man. And then I said a prayer to my dad and my brother. And I said, Lord, please let us walk off, because if not, we got to use Framber. And then we don't have Framber tomorrow, you know, to start. So things couldn't have worked out any better at that time, because we were down to Framber was warming up. And we were down to, Sneed. And let's see, I think that might have been, you know, been it. And you have nightmares of going, you know, 15 innings or something.
Dusty was asked about whether or not there's more pressure on the Rays.
You got to ask him that. I mean, you know, the pressure's still on us, because we still got to win too. But this team has done well and flourished under pressure. And you know, there's only a few teams that have come back, you know, from 0-3. And you know, we'd like to join that few.
Here's Carlos Correa talking about the walk-off home run.
And it's just a great pitcher, and you know, I don't mean no disrespect when I, you know, call my shot. It's just that after my second at bat, I went in the cage. Cintron called me, and he told me a couple of things in the cage that made my swing feel great. Once again, my first two at bats were not that great. I was a little disconnected. He told me what to do, how to stand at the plate. And the third at bat, I hit the liner on the sinker down back to the middle, and everything clicked there. You know, once that clicked, after that at bat, I went back in the cage with him. I said, let me feel it again. And we felt it, and I was like, wow, this feels good. So when I went out at bat, I told Altuve, walking off the field, I said, I'm going to end it. You know, I could feel that my swing was in sync. I could feel that my rhythm was good. I could feel that, you know, I wanted to drive the ball, and I felt like I could do it. So, you know, when he threw me a fastball, I saw it good, and I was able to drive the center field like I wanted to.
He was asked about his long embrace with Dusty Baker.
Well, if you really want to know what I told him, I said, I told you. That's the exact words I use. I told him before going out, I was going to end it. And, you know, like I said before, having the plan and doing it is two different things. And, you know, what I did, and he gave me the hug, you know, it seemed like we didn't want to let go. It was a special moment.
Rays manager Kevin Cash talked about the loss.
Tough loss, you know, great ball game. We just got to get the bats going a little bit. We, you know, three solo homers, and that's really all we had. We got to turn it around. We're going to see a guy, I'm assuming Valdez, tomorrow that we just saw 5 days ago. So hopefully that familiarity will play in our favor and get the bats going.
Before we get to Mark Teixeira and Todd Radom, I want to tell you about the quality NFL podcast content that you can use to fill hours between now and Sunday when you're not watching baseball, of course. Check out new episodes of Fantasy Focus Football, The Bill Barnwell Show, The Adam Schefter Podcast, and The Mina Kimes Show. You can find them all wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Mark Teixeira hit 409 home runs in the big leagues over 14 seasons, drove in 1,298 runs, and you see him now on Baseball Tonight, Get Up, and SportsCenter. Mark, thanks for doing this.
Good to be on, Buster.
All right, Tex, today we're going to talk about Clayton Kershaw, Dave Roberts' decision in the pivotal sixth inning last night, a remarkable performance from an Atlanta rookie in Carlos Correa. But I want to start with this question we got from a listener about the format we're seeing in the National League and American League Championship Series this year, just as we saw in the Division Series, playing on consecutive days. And in the NL ALCS, 7 games in 7 days. Tommy Swim asks, is there any way we can see playoff series with no days off in the future? It feels way more exciting than the traditional way. Tex, what do you think?
I completely agree, Buster. And the reason that I like this is, with no days off, it feels more like the regular season. In the regular season, most of the time, we don't have a day off, but every maybe 7 to 10 days, right? So if that's the case, then we should look at the playoffs and say, I'm going to play this the way I play the regular season. And that means you need a deep starting rotation. You need a deep bullpen. You know, you can't mix and match every single, you know, every three hitters now just because you have a bunch of players that are rested in the bullpen. So I like the no days off. I think it's more exciting, and I wouldn't expect it because, you know, with travel days, it's almost impossible to not have days off. But I like it for this season.
Yeah, and you get heroes like we got yesterday with Bryce Wilson, which I think is really cool, where you have, you know, Brian Snicker sitting there after Kyle Wright's stinker in Game 3. He's got to hand the ball to somebody, and this kid stepped up. What'd you see?
Well, Bryce Wilson, you know, we had him on Baseball Tonight after the game, and I asked him, I said, Bryce, you just saw the Dodgers score 15 runs the night before, yet you attacked them, and you went after them with your fastballs. And he said, well, listen, the reason, you know, one of the reasons that we were down 15 runs is because we were 3-1, 2-0 in so many counts. So he wasn't going to be a guy that's going to nibble early in the count. He attacked that with fastballs, two seamers and four seamers. You know, doesn't really have that wipeout stuff, but he throws just hard enough that with his movement, it gives the Dodgers a little bit different look. And, man, that's exactly what the Braves needed. I think we all expected, everyone expected, Clayton Kershaw against a rookie that not many people had heard of. We thought this is probably an easy Dodger win, but, man, Bryce Wilson had different thoughts, and that was fun to watch.
So I reached out to someone in the Braves organization yesterday, and I said, okay, Bryce Wilson in this moment, you know, how is he going to handle it? And what I got back was, in caps, he's not going to be afraid. And we saw that. Geez, the way he was attacking the Dodger hitters, you almost got the feeling that they were surprised at times by how aggressive he was after they had, you know, seen Kyle Wright nibbling the day before. You mentioned Clayton Kershaw. I did SportsCenter this morning, and I'm kind of at the point with Kershaw that, you know, you shrug your shoulders and say it is what it is. The numbers are what they are. Kershaw regular season, postseason. What do you think?
Here's the thing, Buster. At some point in time, the Dodgers front office and their statisticians and Dave Roberts need to get together and say, all right, when Clayton is going well, we need to take him out. And that sounds ridiculous, and I'm sure plenty of your listeners are going to go, Tex, you're an idiot. That doesn't make any sense. But what we've seen, Buster, is Dave Roberts – year after year after year, leave Clayton Kershaw in just long enough to lose. And the numbers, I mean, I'm no you know, Ivy League mathematician, but the numbers show that as the game goes on, as the playoffs go on, his numbers get worse and worse. So after the seventh inning on, Clayton Kershaw's ERA is 7.91 in the postseason. His third time through the lineup, his numbers are not good. His numbers get worse progressively between the Division Series, the LCS, and the World Series. So last night would have been a perfect opportunity for Dave Roberts to go, man, Clayton, you pitched your butt off for 5 innings. You know, we're in a 1-1 tight game. We've got a deep bullpen. We're going to sit you down. We're going to, you know, you got a sore back. You're out with back spasms for a couple days. You know, thanks for the job well done. You know, watch the rest of the game with your teammates. It didn't happen. And then even as we go further into that inning, after the Freddie Freeman double, you got to take him out. You absolutely have to take him out. Marcell Ozuna hit a bomb off Kershaw earlier in the game. It was not a good matchup. Ozuna absolutely rakes lefties. Kershaw hadn't looked good in that inning already. He hangs a double, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. In fact, I thought leaving him in to face Ozuna was incomprehensible because it wasn't like, you know, he was thinking, boy, if I can get through Ozuna, then there's a left-hander behind him. It was Ozuna, Darnell, and Ozzie Albies, who destroys left-handers, and you knew that he wasn't going to stay in for that. So I just couldn't figure out what was in Dave's head. Now, he mentioned after the game that, you know, the Braves really hadn't hit the ball hard, but I'm with you. I just absolutely thought that was a mistake. What do you think about Kershaw and how we talk about his legacy, which always comes up, it seems like, this time of year?
I think Clayton Kershaw is going to be one of those pitchers that non-Dodger fans will say, greatest pitcher of our generation. And the numbers will prove that. Dodger fans will say, man, we really love Clayton Kershaw. Too bad he couldn't get it done in the playoffs. And that's an unfortunate legacy to have. But it is what it is, Buster. You know, we put a stat out last night, highest career ERA of any postseason pitcher to throw 100 innings. Now, that means you need to be good enough to throw 100 innings in the postseason, but for a guy whose regular season ERA is, I believe, 2.34 or something around that in his career, and his playoff ERA is almost double that, it's just it's tough because Dodger fans especially, if Clayton Kershaw doesn't, you know, isn't on a team that wins the World Series and doesn't have a meaningful part of that World Series, that will unfortunately be his legacy.
How cool was that moment, Carlos Correa, Dusty Baker yesterday?
Man, you know, we've been saying this all playoffs that a lot of people, a lot of fans are not going to root for the Astros, but they're going to root for Dusty Baker. So, you know, we as fans and as objective as we can try to be, enjoy watching this Astros team. I enjoy watching this Astros team because of Dusty Baker, because, you know, he doesn't have that ring that he probably deserves. He's, you know, been there plenty of times and had so many great teams. And then he's got a group of guys that, other than the Houston fan base, is universally hated. So you have this yin and yang with these guys that nobody likes, you know, with a manager and that everybody likes. And I enjoyed watching that embrace last night and you know, watching Dusty Baker work with his team every day. It's been really cool to see during this playoff run.
Astros, the 39th team to trail 3-0 in the best of seven series. They're only the fourth to force a game six. And of course, only one has come back and won from a 3-0 deficit, the 2004 Red Sox. What do you think happens here? You think they get it done?
You know, the odds are against them because the Tampa Bay Rays, they were the best team in the American League for a reason. They beat a really good Yankees team. They got out to a 3-0 lead. I think their bats just got a little quiet, and you know, the Astros had to use seven pitchers last night. The Astros have a very small margin. They kind of got to, you know, pull that or get that inside straight, right? You know, it's not going to be easy for them. The Rays have a much easier time with Snell and Morton going in 6 and 7 if needed, and then a very well-rested bullpen. None of their bullpen arms have been overworked. And they really didn't even yesterday in a close game, in a 1-1 game, Kevin Cash didn't use his best bullpen arms. So tonight, you're going to have Castillo well-rested, Fairbanks well-rested, Alvarado and Loop, even though, you know, most of the Astros hitters are, their best hitters are right-handed. Those left-handers are rested. So I just think that the Rays will probably end up getting this done, but man, it'll be fun to watch.
All right. Two more quick ones, non-playoff related before you go. What's your expectation for the upcoming free agent market, given what's going on in baseball this year?
I think I'm with you, Buster. I think it's going to be a bloodbath. I think it's going to be really difficult for any of the mid to lower tier free agents to get contracts and mid to lower tier arbitration eligible guys. There are teams that have lost over $200 million this year. Now, you may not believe the owners, but given the fact that the fans have not been in the stands yet, you still have to operate a stadium. I mean, people have to realize how expensive it is just to operate a stadium, keep those doors open. Even though they were only for 30 games for each team this season, you're paying players, you're playing staff, You know, all of the COVID protocols is costing a ton of money. So a lot of ownerships are going to look at their GM and say, hey, man, sorry, we're not signing any free agents this year. And all it takes is a couple of the big boys, you know, the Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, Dodgers. If those guys aren't signing big free agents either, maybe even the top guys are going to have depressed markets. So it's just not a good year to be a free agent.
And this week, more conversation about the Yankees and catcher Gary Sanchez and what they're going to do. What would you do if you were running the Yankees at the catching position?
I would work with Gary Sanchez all offseason and try to figure out what's going on. This is a guy, I was a teammate of Gary Sanchez in 2016 when he burst onto the scene and looked like the greatest thing since Babe Ruth. Something's happened. I mean, he's not good behind the plate. He looks awful most of his at-bats. Yeah, he's going to run into some home runs just because of that talent. But for a guy with that amount of ability and with a track record that he's done it, so we know that he can hit in the big leagues. So I would just try to figure out what's going on with him. I would re-sign him. I would offer him a contract in arbitration because he's pretty cheap, you know, relative to what his upside is. I think he made $5 million this year. So he's not going to get that much of a raise considering how poorly he performed this year. His market is nil. He's got such a low trade value right now. If you trade him, plenty of teams will take him. They're not going to give you anything for him. So I just think the Yankees need to hold on to him and hope that he turns it around in 2021.
All right, Tex. Always love hearing you. Always love watching you on Baseball Tonight.
Thanks, Buster.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
As Tex said, people are rooting for Dusty Baker. And here he is talking about the wild scene at home plate and how he was praying it didn't go into extra innings.
Everybody was just jumping up and down and pouring ice, and Carlos was going crazy as he usually does when he does something spectacular like that. And, you know, we were just, I was grateful and thankful and happy, happy, you know, all at the same time. And, you know, we get to play, you know, another day. And tomorrow is huge. And, you know, I mean, we're one step closer to being, you know, getting over that mountain and that hurdle that was, it seemed like it was way off in the distance a couple days ago. And so I'm just glad we didn't use Schramper. I am so glad. Like I said, I was praying to my dad, you know, who's gone, and my brother, you know, who's gone. And I was like, please, I mean, you know, and all the greats that are up there, I said, please let us walk it off here, because we were in bad shape, you know, pitching wise, and they were in great shape. I mean, you know, they had us. You go during the game, and you say, okay, they've used two, we've used three, and then we use five, and they use two or three, and so they had length on us. I mean, big time length, and they still got a little length on us, but we feel good about having Framber tomorrow.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing? And tell me, because you're always working on projects when I reach out to you. You've always got something that you're tinkering with. What are your projects lately?
Well, Buster, November 3rd, which is a big day in our country because of the fact that I have a new book coming out that day. It is called Fabric of the Game. It is the stories behind the teams, the names, and the looks of every team in the history of the National Hockey League, a hockey book, Buster. And that is going to be available wherever books are sold. And we're also selling exclusive commemorative limited edition signed copies at fabricofthegamebook.com. Mouthful.
Yeah, very nice. And I can tell you exactly, and I will be able to, In the days ahead, exactly how many more days until the release of your book? Because that number has been especially important, it feels like, in recent days. all right. Before we get to a unique ballpark conversation, I want to ask you, watching that game last night, the National League Championship Series, Braves and Dodgers, I was absolutely shocked by the impact of the wind. You know, they had the roof open in this new ballpark in Texas. And there were several times when a ball was hitting the air toward left field and you're like, man, he got all that one. And all of a sudden, the left fielder's staggering under it, making the catch in the middle of left field. I can't remember seeing a ballpark seemingly that affected by wind other than Wrigley Field. What about you?
Yeah, it was really surprising. And listen, we've talked about the design of ballparks all season long. And we know, all of us know, that aerodynamics are taken into account. And the fact is that this ballpark, of course, is, you know, across the street, essentially, from where the Rangers played for all those years. So it was very surprising. I don't know if it has anything to do with this particular time of the year in the Metroplex. But yeah, it was pretty shocking.
All right. Because of events of 2020, because of coronavirus, the Toronto Blue Jays had to wind up playing in Buffalo. What do you got there?
Well, Buster, this is our last stop on our whirlwind tour around the majors. So I went back and I looked at where we began and where we're at. We began our road trip around the majors on a Wednesday, March 4th, with a discussion of Citi Field in New York. And of course, 1 week later, the world began to shut down. As we all know, every single one of us, that morning, March 11, we talked Nationals Park and RFK Stadium. And then later that day, the World Health Organization officially declared a global pandemic. The Dow Jones fell 1,465 points, and the NBA suspended its season. And that really was the big marker for me and for so many people of, wow, this is really something. And it's been 7 months since then. So guys, being able to travel virtually around the majors every single week, this has been a really good thing. I kind of feel like we got to experience this road trip together from the safety of our own homes, even as all of us stayed home. So fittingly for this oddest of seasons, we have a bonus ballpark, number 31, Salem Field in Buffalo, as you said, the home of the Buffalo Blue Jays, and of course, the minor league baseball Buffalo Bisons. I have to say, I was there for a game in April 2017. So April in Buffalo, you know, they get a little bit of weather up there. Did you know that?
I've heard that. I've heard something called lake effect.
Lake effect, yes. And it's not far from the lake. I was giving a talk in Buffalo to a group, and I really made the most out of my visit. And actually, I have a photo with the Bison's mascot. Do you know what the Bison's mascot's name is, Buster?
I
just gave you the answer.
No, tell me.
Buster. His name is Buster. Buster Bison.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I'm
completely honored now.
Well, you know, we need to go to a game there. I think I do hope the Blue Jays go back there for a game. Toronto deserves their games going forward, of course. But anyway, downtown Buffalo is jumping. It's a pretty good place. And Salem Field is right there in the middle of everything. Remembering when this ballpark was built, it was originally called Pilot Field. It was the first retro-influenced new ballpark, opened in 1988, and that is 4 years before Camden Yards, guys. In fact, the Giants and Orioles visited Buffalo to inspect Pilot Field, see what they could see before they built Oracle Park in Camden Yards. The ballpark was designed to host an MLB expansion team. These were the franchises that eventually became the Marlins and Rockies, so the early 90s. Buffalo in the mix for an expansion franchise. And if you recall, all season long, we looked at those beautiful shots of Salem Field. And we saw that peaked metal roof around the grandstand. Well, that was designed to be removed. And the girders underneath were buttressed and made to support an additional level of seating. So they really could have ramped it up to big league proportions. Get this. I remember this, but I was really surprised to review it. 1.18 million fans attended in 1988, and that was more than three major league clubs with less games played. As a matter of fact, they drew over a million fans over the course of their first six seasons up there. So quite an atmosphere. It was way ahead of its time. It had a food court and an on-site restaurant at a time when ballparks, minor league and major league, didn't have so many amenities for those of us old enough to remember. Lots and lots of retro flourishes, particularly on the exterior, nestled right there in downtown Buffalo. And now, thanks to the Blue Jays, the ballpark has been upgraded with state-of-the-art lighting and improved player facilities. And one other cool fact, the original flagpole from center field of War Memorial Stadium, where Roy Hobbs crashed the lights out, that is at Salem Field. So there's our trip around the majors. We're done.
Todd, you did such a great job on that this year. I absolutely love to hear you talk about it. And the cool thing is that you know all this stuff like off the top of your head, which is just amazing to me that you're able to keep that together. One thing about Pilot Field, I've been there. I started covering baseball in 1989 for the Nashville Banner. I covered the Nashville Sounds. And so in 1990, I believe, and this was at a time when there was a lot of talk that Buffalo was going to be an expansion team, and their owners, Bob and Mindy Rich, were talking about that. And there was a lot of conversation about that really high attendance. Well, in 1990, the Sounds and the Buffalo wound up playing in a playoff game, and it lasted for 18 innings. And Charlie Mitchell, former Red Sox pitcher, I'm sure you remember his name, he threw seven innings of relief, and he won that game. And I covered that in Pilot Field. I never forget. It was a really cool moment. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, guys, here we go. This franchise has the best winning percentage by games played in American League Championship Series history. Is it the Rays, the Blue Jays, the Brewers, or the Texas Rangers? Best winning percentage by games played in ALCS history.
Wow, Rays? This is a tricky question. Go ahead.
Well, no layups at this point of the season, boys. Rays, Blue Jays, Brewers, or Rangers?
What do you got, Taylor?
I don't know, guys. Let's go Blue Jays. The Buffalo Blue Jays for today.
I think I actually have a chance to win this one. I think it might be the Rays.
Well, you're both wrong because it's the Texas Rangers. 8-4, 667 winning percentage.
Yes.
Of course, those back-to-back World Series appearances in the last, a decade ago when the world was a different place.
Yeah, and the formula that, you just touched on right there, you had to pick the team that, didn't wind up losing in the ALCS. And, of course, every time that the Rangers get knocked out in the postseason, before the World Series, it was always in the Division Series. So I was an idiot. Thank goodness Taylor wasn't much better than me this week. Todd, I appreciate you doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Enjoy this weekend.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. First one up, Aaron Peters at Aaron Takes DC writes in, what is the mood in the dugout and what is the thinking of the coaching staff in a game like the NLCS Game 3 after the top of the first? Just try to get it over with as fast as possible. What do you think, Buster?
I don't think that so much as they just want to tend to sort of the emotions of the players. When we had our Zoom call yesterday with Brian Snitker, the manager of the Braves, I asked him about Kyle Wright and if he had gotten a chance to talk to Kyle Wright, who didn't get out of the first inning. And he said that during the course of the game, he actually, along with Rick Kranitz, their pitching coach, pulled Wright aside and said, hey, you got to wash this off and move forward. You saw Kyle after he went back in and changed his shirt. He came and sat in the dugout for the last innings of the game. And they're just trying to get the players focused moving forward. And as we heard from Snitker before, Braves are really good at that. And they seem to have a unique ability that baseball players do to just move forward after a tough loss.
Last one for the week, Sterling at StirRide73 writes in, hey, Buster, given that many teams are dealing with financial uncertainty due to the pandemic, which teams are best positioned to capitalize on the many players that will be available for a bargain this offseason?
Yeah, it's like a real estate tycoon taking advantage of a soft market. And I think the Mets are absolutely going to be one of those teams. You've got a new owner coming in place. They're in a great position to take advantage of some of the lower prices that Mark Teixeira was talking about. I've also heard the Toronto Blue Jays are in a good position. And another team actually well set up, the Atlanta Braves, who really don't have a lot of long-term obligations with their payroll. They have tremendous young talent, young cheap talent. They've got Ronald Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies on these great team-friendly deals. And in recent years, they've signed guys like Josh Donaldson, Marcell Ozuna, Cole Hamels, the short-term deals. So it feels like the Braves are going to be busy this offseason.
All righty, Buster. Well, when we come back on Monday, we're going to have a World Series set. I mean, that's pretty cool. What do you question for you? What do you think about like the matchups in terms of fan interest? Like, of course, I feel like Major League Baseball would go wild for an Astros Dodgers series. That seems kind of unlikely. So the Braves Rays is probably what we're going to get. How do you feel about how that kind of balances out in the grand scheme of things? You know, people are always like, oh, no one's going to watch if it's this matchup versus this matchup. Where do you stand on all that?
Well, you're right. It probably is just sort of unique to the individual fan bases. The Braves have one of the bigger, more underrated fan bases, I think, because they were, you know, on national television for so long back in the 80s and 90s. And one of those fans is my 16-year-old son, Taylor. Late last night after the Braves won to pull within one game of reaching the World Series, I thought he was asleep. You know, I looked in his room and it was dark, and out of the darkness I hear, "Hey, Dad." We're so fired up that the Braves are almost in the World Series. Look, for ratings purposes, if you're a Fox executive, yeah, you want Dodgers and you want Astros. And at this moment, you're probably going to get Braves and Rays, and that would probably be the lowest rated combination of those World Series.
Wow. All righty. Enjoy the games, everyone. Please subscribe to, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and send those Bleacher tweets in. Thank you very much, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tex, to Todd, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.